And good morning on an August 18th, Thursday. The big local story we're covering is the closure of the 210 eastbound lane through Irwindale. Began last night. It will last 5 days. And the reason that Jennifer Jones Lee is broadcasting from our remote studio at her house, in case the station shuts down, is she tried to come in this morning and was just stopped cold at the closure of the 210. Now, I want to talk to you about a topic that I have felt pretty strongly about, and it's a spin on gun control. You know, I'm a big fan of gun control. They scare the hell out of me. I'm a firm believer that only police and the Army should have weapons, and I know all the arguments, both pro and con, and everybody has got a good argument here. The one thing that makes no sense to me whatsoever is the gun lobby some reason defending ghost guns, that ghost guns are okay, and the selling of ghost gun parts for some reason are okay. Ghost guns are unregistered. Ghost guns have no serial number. Ghost guns, you can't trace who the hell has it. And the way you create a ghost gun is you buy a gun that doesn't have all the parts, or you buy a gun with parts separately, and they tell you, here's how to put it all together, and now you've got a ghost gun. And I'm talking about a Glock, an AR-15. So a month ago, UPS announced it's going to stop shipping packages for companies that sell these parts and that you can make untraceable firearms, the ghost guns. Now, one of the nation's most prominent gun control advocacy groups saying to FedEx, you got to do the same thing. You've got to stop this shipment stuff. The Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, remember Representative Gabby Gifford, who was shot in the head and survived, sent a letter to FedEx to adopt a policy of refusing to ship dangerous firearms products that in part are fueling the epidemic of gun violence in America. And the problem with gun violence, and just a quick aside, yeah, we know this, the complete explosion of gun violence and deaths. And the answer among the gun advocates is it's not a question of not enough guns or too many guns, question of there isn't enough guns. If everybody had a gun, therefore it would be a much safer place. That's the argument. So there's a federal law that has changed. A rule change on ghost guns takes effect August 24th, next week, and reclassifies some gun parts called frames and receivers as firearms under the law. And when you talk about these parts that are shipped that make up the last part of a gun, therefore you now have an unregistered gun because if it's not a fully functional gun, it's not a firearm, according to federal law. And you can have as many of those as you want. Well, now certain frames and receivers do require a serial number and a background check for purchasing them. In other words, it's like buying a gun. And until recently, retailers, online retailers, have been able to sell these things, partially completed parts, the tools that were necessary for home assembly. Because remember, until the gun is assembled, it's not a gun. It's not a weapon. And I'm talking about Glock pistols, even AR-15 weapons, assault weapons. So it becomes nearly impossible for the cops to determine where a gun is made or sold. Data compiled by Vice News from public records said 10,500 unserialized guns were collected by the police in major cities in the last five years. Federal authorities put it at 45,000 of these guns. Now, 11 states, including California, which has the strictest gun laws, and Washington, D.C., have laws regulating or requiring registration of gun laws. But it's not gone far enough because you've got gun states where this is never going to happen. You've got gun states that are firmly in control of those, or at least the people that are gun advocates are in control of the legislature. So what you have private companies now, UPS has halted business with several of these companies that sell these firearm parts, warning the retailers the packages could be seized and destroyed because they may be violating applicable laws concerning the shipment of these ghost guns to unauthorized locations. So how does UPS even figure out? You send a package with a gun in it, you wrap it up, and how do they know you're even shipping a weapon? They have algorithms. They actually X-ray a certain number of these boxes. Can't do all of them. But they're pretty good at figuring out what a box looks like that has a gun part in it. The way it's wrapped, the size, maybe even the location. And so, a particular location that it shipped from, a certain factory, a certain address. So it's a new policy. UPS started it. FedEx is hopefully following heed. So you know how these guys gotten around it? There's one manager that was interviewed for an article, Advice, Vice News. And he said, we have an easy way out. You know, I don't care about UPS. I don't give a damn about FedEx. You know what we can do and what we're doing now? United States Postal Service. That's how we're shipping our guns, because there's no law against that. Isn't that special? Ooh, this is a topic I love to talk about and something that affects every one of us, from what we buy and what's happening on in restaurants, if we ever go to restaurants again, food manufacturing, car manufacturing, of course, robotics. And robotics, well, you talk about the wave of the future. Anybody who says, hey, Bill, I want some advice. I want to do for the future. Am I going to say go into radio? Absolutely not. I'm going to say, you know what? Why don't you try robotics? Because that really is the future. So Google has a robotics lab, no surprise. And here's one of their recent experiments, because they're way up there. I mean, they've bought a lot of these companies and a lot of software companies that deal with robotics. And so researchers recently asked one of their robots to build a hamburger. And they did it out of various plastic parts because, they don't need real hamburgers while they're figuring this out. So the mechanical arm that put this together knew enough to add ketchup on top of the burger before the lettuce. But it got something a little bit wrong because the robot thought the way to do this correctly is to put the entire bottle of ketchup inside the burger. Okay, it needs a little bit of work. But let me tell you what's going on. That's just a fun story as they develop this thing. But recently developed artificial intelligence software known as large language models, researchers say they're able to design robots and help humans, with a much broader range of everyday tasks. So the secret is not robots taking over the world. I mean, that's not going to happen. And are they sentient beings? Do they have emotions? Although they can pretend to have emotions, you can program that in. I was talking to my daughter, who is a real whiz at robotics and mainly computers. And she's involved with this Amazon project thing that I don't understand. And she explained to me, you know what? In the end, it's zero and ones, Dad. That's all it is. And you can't create emotion out of yes and no, zero and ones. And when they talk about artificial intelligence, it's artificial intelligence. But it gets pretty close to what we think a robot can or cannot be sentient, its own human being, its own being that it thinks. Not really, but I got to tell you what they're doing. Robots are to the point where they can now respond to complex requests, complete requests, more like a human. There was one demonstration done at Google, and this was last week. A researcher told a robot, I'm hungry. Can you get me a snack? And what the robot did is went through a cafeteria that it had at its beck and call and pulled out a bag of chips and handed it to the human. Now, that's pretty advanced stuff. Can you get me a snack? So what does it do? Well, it thinks and goes, what is a snack? And it has a bunch of choices. And now, if there's only snacks there, if it's a limited amount of information, that's pretty easy. But what if it's a store full of stuff? It's like asking you, get me a snack. Which way do you go? Matter of fact, a robot would probably do a much better job. You know how a robot's going to do a better job? It's probably going to go into the internet. It's probably going to data mine because they know who you are, assuming that the robot has your information. What do you buy? What do you like? What do you look at on the internet? What do you search for? You ever bought Doritos when you go to the supermarket? Do you buy a lot of them? For example, get me a snack. What are they going to do? They're going to look. Okay, Bill, you like Boar's Head ham. You like Costco cheese, and put together a sandwich for me. That's not AI. That's just a robot using a lot of information and making choices that are fairly easy to program. However, according to a research scientist at Google, get me a snack. Open a drawer, get me a snack is actually a fundamentally different paradigm because it goes a step beyond. Now, we know all about robots. They really started in factories. The robots that made cars so easy to build, where it used to be you'd have 200 people on an assembly line. Today, you can do it faster with 20 people on the assembly line because the robots, they weld, they paint, they do all of what a human used to be, do much faster, much more efficiently. So these language model, as I said, they work by taking up these huge amounts of text uploaded to the internet, and then the robot trains itself to guess the responses that you need, whoever is there. Now, if it's just someone walking in the door, get me a snack, that's going to be random. They know what snacks are. So is the robot going through a supermarket going to hand you an apple because you happen to be a health freak? Hand you a bag of pork rinds, which are fried. Well, they're disgusting, but don't know. But if they know who I am, if they know who you are, or they can guess who you are, how about facial recognition? How about snapping a picture of your clothes and figuring out where your socioeconomic level is? How about guessing, and in many ways through artificial intelligence, doing a much better job than a human being would do? And this is actually pretty controversial work. You can have conversations with robots that these language models have become so good at predicting the right response that as you're engaging with them, it feels like you're having a conversation with a person that knows what he or she is talking about. But it feels like you're having a conversation. And they can pretend emotion. But it's really programmed. I'm not that scared. There are people that are scared of the artificial intelligence. And, you know, based on my conversations with my daughter, who is half a genius, mainly because I don't understand anything she does, I'm feeling pretty comfortable. Some of the language models, based on the kind of programming that goes in, have shown themselves to be racist or sexist because that has to be programmed out. Some are easily manipulated into spouting hate speech because, again, it's not easy to figure out where that person who is talking to the robot wants to go. And robots really don't have morals. There is really no control. A robot that is using AI really doesn't know, doesn't have a feeling as to what is offensive, what is sexist. I mean, they're totally neutral, and they're just responding to what the programming is, what the information that's coming in. And you've heard the phrase garbage in, garbage out. Well, there's a lot of garbage on the internet, that's for sure. Now, some language models are much more sophisticated than others, you would think. But in general, what these language models do is give robots high-level planning steps. They can actually go from A to B to C. There's a Carnegie Mellon assistant professor who studies this and says the problem is at this point is it won't give robots all the information they need. For example, here's one. Here's an example. How much force to apply when you're opening a refrigerator door? A robot can't go on the internet and figure that one out. That has to come from somewhere else. And they're trying to figure that out. And according to him, and this is the final statement that I want to make, and it makes all the sense in the world for those that are worried about robots taking over the world. He said, a human and a robot working together is the most productive way of dealing with life. And that's where we're going to go. Robots do the manual heavy lifting. Humans do the nuanced troubleshooting. Even though robots can be programmed to, quote, troubleshoot, it's just not the same, at least at this point. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe it's going to be the robots that are going to make all the decisions for me. Who the hell knows? Time for movies and music and the...
The studio's falling apart.
Yeah, the studio's falling apart. My copy stand has a habit of falling over. And it is time for Mo Kelly. Mo heard Sundays from 7 to 10 p.m., Saturdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Notice I reversed that.
Yes, you did.
At Mr. Mo Kelly. All right, we got a lot to talk about today, Mo.
Sure do.
One of the moments of the Academy Award history, you know, these little moments, the guy running naked across the stage with David Niven there. And one of the big ones is Sasha Littlefeather, a name that, unless you really pay attention, who the hell is she? Well, you want to explain who she is, what happened, and you have a sound cut.
Sure. Very quickly, Marlon Brando was up for the Academy Award for Best Actor for The Godfather. And he said in advance, I'm sending this woman in my stead. He was very radical, my word, in regard to support of Native American indigenous people at that time. And so he wanted to send up this woman to not accept the award on his behalf. And it was met with boos and tomahawk chops. John Wayne allegedly was in the wings, was going to come out and remove this woman from the stage. So here's the actual audio from 1973.
The winner is Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Accepting the award for Marlon Brando in The Godfather, Miss Shasheen Littlefeather.
Hello, my name is Sasheen Littlefeather. I'm Apache, and I'm president of the National Native American Affirmative Image Committee. I'm representing Marlon Brando this evening, and he has asked me to tell you in a very long speech, which I cannot share with you presently because of time, but I will be glad to share with the press afterwards, that he very regretfully cannot accept this very generous award. And the reasons for this being are the treatment of American Indians today by the film industry. Excuse me. And on television, in movie reruns, and also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
Okay.
So you get the sentiment and the mood of the
now,
audience.
We heard some applause there, but applause relative to the boos, what did you hear in the audience?
There were more boos. There were tomahawk chops. There were people who were visibly agitated who got up out of their seats, mm-hmm. I'm told, and wanted to leave the auditorium. It was not well received. The reason why we're talking about this is because the Motion Picture Academy is now apologizing and honoring her in a healing an indigenous celebration, which the Academy is hosting on September 17th.
She's still around?
Yes, she is. She'll be in attendance. I think she's in her 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. All right. So this is a response that the Academy has, like many other organizations have, apologizing for past foibles, past straight out racism, because I think she was right at that time. If you're looking at the 60s and 70s, Native Americans didn't play Native Americans.
Not at all.
It was always a white actor, not even Hispanic actors. It was always some white actor that would put on the wig and do the how. It's just It was that racist.
You mean like Lone Ranger?
Yeah. Who was by the way, Tonto?
I can't remember.
I don't remember his name, but I remember Kim Wasabi.
Yes.
That one I remember. And then I figured out I always got it confused with Wasabi and Kemosabe. It's just very strange. So we're seeing that. Now, let me ask you, again, how many people in the Academy are looking at this and saying, come on, you know, now we're getting into political correctness, or there's just a genuine feeling we have to make this right?
Two things. First, for those who say that these award shows have suddenly become political, no, they have always been political on some form or level. And also the Academy Awards, they understand that they have an image problem beyond Will Smith and what have you. They have an image problem with African-Americans and different communities as far as being exclusive and exclusionary in nature, and also just the history of movies and entertainment.
All right, now that's Marlon Brando refusing the Oscar.
And he told Sasha Littlefeather not to even touch it.
Okay, so the only one I can think of, the only comparison was George C. Scott refused the Oscar for Patton, Best Actor, but different reason, based on the fact he did not want to get into a struggling match, not a struggling match, in political fights with other actors. He said,
his peers.
You know, yeah, he says, I don't want to get into that. I'm not competing with other actors, and so therefore he turned it down. So those are the only two instances I can figure out where that happened. Maybe it happened before. No, I don't think so.
I can't think of another one.
Yeah, those are the only two times in the Academy history. Let's talk about the Rust set, Alec Baldwin, and what the FBI said. Directly contradicts what Alec Baldwin said.
And not only that, the medical examiner has ruled the shooting an accident, which is just an absence of intent. But it does not absolve Alec Baldwin of culpability. He still could be charged. To your point, the FBI report said that it tested the gun and it did not fire without pulling the trigger.
Yeah, his position was that he never pulled the trigger. Although, I don't know if it matters. I mean, clearly it was a mistake.
Yeah.
It was clearly negligence. I don't even know where the issue was of any criminal culpability. What, someone purposely put a live round in the gun? Someone purposely put a box containing live rounds on that cart of which the bullets were taken out and put into the weapon? I mean, it was clearly a major screw-up. There's negligence somewhere in there, but he's going to get nailed. You're right, it's his company.
Yeah, there's negligence. It's just a matter of whether it would be criminal negligence. The only thing that's outstanding is the FBI is saying that they're still reviewing his phone calls in the moments immediately after the incident.
Unless he said something. Yeah, you know. I think it's just, oh, my God, yeah. What happened? I can't see it beyond there. Frankly, I didn't understand how big a story it was and why it was such a big deal, other than it was Alec Baldwin, other than it was a death of a cinematographer, which in and of itself is a horrible story. But expanding it beyond that, I never understood.
I never understood the need to use an actual gun in a situation as opposed to a replica.
Although, how many times has an actual gun with blanks been used over the course of the history of filmmaking? Hundreds of thousands, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, and now you're not going to see real guns or a gun. Well, you're going to see people a hell of a lot more careful is what you're going to see. Let's talk about House of the Dragon versus Lord of the Rings and what's happening with that, because everything is, well, prequels.
Prequel TV shows. They both are major franchises in their own way. The Lord of the Rings has had more success because they've had a very successful cinematic trilogy, whereas Game of Thrones was just a television series. But both of them ended on relatively sour notes, down notes. It seemed like both of them stayed too long. It did not have as much material for fans as maybe they originally thought. So the House of Dragons prequel, I think it's being met two different ways. There's obviously a fan base which is very anticipatory of it. They really want it. And a lot of us are, me included, saying like, okay, I think I saw enough with the last season of Game of Thrones. But they have learned their lesson. The best part of Game of Thrones was show the dragon, show the dragon, show the dragon. So they give us a TV series called what? You know, House of Dragons. So there's going to be plenty of dragons, and I'm quite sure there's going to be a lot of fire breathing and things of that nature. But I personally don't like prequels because there are no stakes. because we know who has to live and survive from the prequel as it links up to the original series.
Unless it is a whole new series with none of the same people because it goes back 200 years or whatever prior to the Game of Thrones.
Yes, but we know that the House of Targaryen, whatever the house name is, not everyone can die because that house has to play a prominent role in Game of Thrones.
Were you a Game of Thrones watcher?
I was not originally. It was because of the pandemic and listening to producer Michelle saying, oh, you got to watch Game of Thrones. And so when the pandemic started, it's like I had a little time on my hands. So I said, why don't I just go ahead and start watching from the beginning? And so I binge watched all 7 seasons, I think it was, in a course of maybe a week and a half.
Yeah, I at first I couldn't get into it. I could not. I started watching it 3 times. And I struggled through it, and on the 4th go, I got caught up in it. You know who actually got me reasonably excited about it, and because of her, I went ahead and watched it, was Robin, our boss.
Really?
Yeah. She is, she loved Game of Thrones. She read the book and said, oh my God, it's terrific. Problem with the book, and a lot of people have not read, it's not one of those books where everybody in the world read Harry Potter before seeing Harry Potter, mm-hmm. where the books were just as popular. I mean, the Game of Thrones television show exploded. But if you read the book, you actually needed a spreadsheet to figure out who is connected to who.
Yep. And that's why I had to binge it. I couldn't have watched it from week to week to week.
All right, so you made a statement. I want to do this because Shannon's aboard, and I want to have her jump aboard real quickly. And that is the difference between the television show and the movie of Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. Can you compare the two in terms of the money? You don't know how much money Game of Thrones made because it all caught up. And you know exactly what Lord of the Rings. Has it reached a point where when you have 100 million viewers on Netflix, for example, versus, I don't know, 12 million people who, and I don't even know what the number was, the people that saw Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I don't know if you can monetize streaming in the way that you can actual tickets, because that box office of revenue is hard to duplicate when you're talking about a $1 billion franchise.
Yeah, Shannon, Game of Thrones fan?
I read the first book, and then that guy had his genitals cut off, and I stopped watching after that because I felt real bad for him, the eunuch. Remember that part?
You didn't watch like History of the World part 1 and 2 with Mel Brooks?
Yeah.
And the eunuch?
No.
Eunuchs bother you?
I didn't know about eunuchs.
Are you a eunuchicist?
I feel bad for the eunuchs. Real bad. What if that happened to you?
That would be unfortunate.
Well, that would be very unfortunate.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you something.
Yeah.
Marry a Jewish woman.
Oh.
That's all you have to do.
So how does that help me?
All right. Okay.
Shannon, what's going
Let's
on?
Move off the genitals.
Yes.
All right. Coming up, there is one story that is transcending all of the different categories of news. You cannot get away from this story this morning. It's everywhere. And we have an exclusive with the guy it happened to coming up right after the news at 10 o'clock.
Oh, that's exciting. So you're not going to miss that. Also, before we bail out of here, really quickly, handle on the law. I am taking your marginal legal questions and giving you marginal legal advice. I'll do it off the air. You can still listen to Gary and Shannon on the phone. The number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. And I go through the phone calls pretty quickly. So I'll be doing that for about, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes. So if you can't get to me during the weekend, you can always do it today, as a matter of fact, 877-520-1150. I'll start in just a few moments. Tomorrow, Wake Up Call with Jennifer. Once again, we're here, the rest of the crew, from 6 to 10. As we said, Gary and Shannon up next. This is KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.